The following Dharma talk was recorded in May 2014 in Excelsior Spring, Missouri. It is one of 21 recordings from the retreat called Insight Dialogue, taught by Gregory Kramer. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. Gregory Kramer is the founder and guiding teacher of Metta Programs and has been teaching insight meditation since 1980. He developed the practice of insight dialogue and has been teaching it since 1995. Gregory is the author of numerous books. Find out more at www.metta.org.
I live, and I invite you to live, with this question of awakening. What is awakening? And the tradition that I come from, which is early Buddhist tradition, Theravada, and this kind of thing, the tradition that was sort of the home country of Vipassana meditation and its offspring of mindfulness practices. Awakening is both central in the teaching and yet has taken on a sense of being something very distant. And some of that distance I actually appreciate, because it indicates a respect for the challenges of being human. On the other hand, if one has a sense of otherworldliness, impossibility, something that makes it feel like it's arm's length and not a real question in the life of someone who's engaging with a path of moral behavior and concentrating the mind and living wisely, you know, those things. If it seems that distant, then something is off. Some sort of disservice has preceded you, that you inherited that something that's distancing like that. So I'd like to invite you just to kind of think with me into a little bit of what this is that we're talking about, and whether it's something that feels relevant to you here and now. And I'd like to draw from one piece of like a major observation, I guess, or suggestion or belief that comes from some people who think about these things, some traditions, some Buddhist traditions, and which is that the qualities of the mind are inherently awake, and we just forget, or there's obscurations that sort of come up, and we just get all distracted from that. We get agitated from that. And There's in my mind, in my heart, I guess in whatever small way in my experience, there is some truth in that. One can touch in moments a certain quality of the mind, of the heart, that is genuinely peaceful when it's simply not agitated. You know, it's like that. or genuinely present with other people and with circumstances when we're simply not distracted. I mean, it really can be that simple in some way. I guess there's a catch. And that is that we are often really stressed and distracted and conditioned by, you know, a whole lifetime of pain and, for many of us, trauma, loss, agitation born of just circumstances in our culture and our families, you know, just normal stuff. Some of it for you, you know, you may have experienced real abnormal, intense suffering also. Millions of us have. Billions. So, because of this, the norm is this agitated and not fully present and often, don't you think, kind of self-involved, self-obsessed way of living and being. And let's be honest about it, you know? It's like, how can I get comfortable or how can I get satisfied or, you know, how can my family, maybe we expand out a little bit, but that pretty soon we get to the edges for most of us of compassion. And there's maybe the edge isn't really very far out when we think about how deeply clear our minds are. You know, then it's like, well, not too often, you know. It's the usual kind of, I think, honest answer. So, the catch is not just that there's these obscurations, you know, that there's these habits and these patterns and these pains and these confusions and these stresses. And that it doesn't have to be that way. The catch is that the deep roots of these patterns of heart are such that seeing through them and genuinely releasing them at their deepest roots, that's what takes some pretty serious commitment. That's where the depth of concentration and tranquility, that's where the diligence of inquiry, the strength of energy, the balance of equanimity, the kind of moving contribution of joy and rapture, and the knowing what's going on of mindfulness is really needed to cut through and to get deep enough into this conditioned heart, this conditioned body. This body carries so much, you know what I mean? Like there's so much stress and fear and confusion just in the body. And you know, you bring in the whole psychological history and put it together with that, you know, desire for pleasant sensations and the hungers of the, you know, of all the senses, but also the the ways we build ourselves a world for everything from the drive, you know, the kind of the drives of sexuality and all this kind of thing, to how we protect ourselves, how we build a sense of me feeling secure, can get pretty complex. So meditation is something that doesn't function on its own to bring about this thing that we would call waking up. It's built in with the whole life of commitment. And that doesn't mean it has to look to you at all like religious commitment to a religion or something, but a commitment to the inquiry of what is this human experience and what is this suffering that I experience and what is it like when I'm free, to really be curious. Have you ever had moments, really, of just feeling clear and simple? Have you ever had moments of feeling just naturally loving, or of the heart being deeply moved by the suffering of someone that you've seen? Has that happened to you? Why isn't it always like that? No, really, why isn't it? There's enough pain always around you that you could always be in that compassion. And wherever there's another being, a human being or an animal, there's a chance to love. Why are we not always in love? And no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, there's always the chance to be completely, brilliantly bright in mindfulness and peace. Right? Why not? And then you say, oh, that's why. You know, any of us would have our own answers. Well, because I just flew all day, you know, or because I have money problems, or because, well, frankly, my dad did this to me when I was young and I still feel it in my, you know, armor. I mean, we've all got answers. But to look at the actuality of this human situation. So meditation is this means of coming closer to this actuality. And it works together with a lifestyle that's committed to actuality, to seeing things as they are, rather than, you know, what, living in fantasy a lot we do, and, you know, all the wandering and all the wanting and all the worry about the past. What is actually here? And we have, even when we see what's here, we're seeing through all the filters of these histories, right? How close can we get? How intimate can we be with life as it actually is? Does that sound like a useful question? Like a interesting question? I hope so. Because that's why we're here. To live in that question. And, you know, if I dare say, to live in the possibility, to live into the possibility suggested by that question. To live into the possibility of a greater intimacy with experience. Not for its own sake. That is a lovely thing. But as that happens, when one sees things and lives in things with clarity, then the kinds of patterns of the mind and the emotions, the patterns that yield action, that are rooted in greed and fear and anger, they so obviously hurt that you just don't want to do them anymore. They begin to melt away. So intimacy with your own experience or a sense of being mindfulness, being mindful, is great. But it's part of a process. Not like, when I first started practice, which was 40 years ago, I entered sort of the Buddhist meditation path this year, 40 years ago. Before I met my teacher, I had come to this deep intuition that what really mattered on the spiritual path was awareness. That's how I spoke about it at the time, awareness. I had no idea how this awareness would come about. So I was just going, just trying to be aware, you know, I was just going. I remember seriously walking, I think I'm aware now, you know. It was interesting. But one of the most stunning things when I first met Anagarika Damodina was, aside from the fact that she was clearly living it, was you want to develop that quality, you practice. Wow. You know, seemed like a huge, I didn't realize at the time what was being said. This is sort of my post-reflection on what was going on there. But I didn't have a sense beyond awareness. I mean, I knew it was important, but I didn't have a sense of why. So I'm sharing with you a sense of why it's important. Which in a nutshell is suffering and the end of suffering. One becomes aware and knows the nature of, oh, this is suffering right now. I didn't think it was. I felt pretty good, but then I realized I'm pretty stressful. And he said, oh, okay, that's suffering. Oh, there's the end of suffering, you know, a little bit of diminishing, a little bit, right? And you begin to see suffering all around, and you begin to see little bits of diminishing. And if you're inclined to allow the possibility of a radically altered quality of being human, one can consider the possibility of the ending of it. I mean, and that doesn't mean that one doesn't experience physical pain and human relationships are still complex and so on, but the response to the world, the engagement with the world, could be radically different. And the good news is I'm not speaking to anything that, as far as I could tell, there wasn't anybody who didn't raise their hand and say that they haven't touched some moment of peace, of love, of compassion, of simplicity. Right? So you have a sense of direction from your own experience. That's your guide. Which brings us to being on retreat. Because on retreat, we actually establish intentionally a very different mode of life for a short period of time. Could be a day, could be a week, could be a month. And with the protection of a community with shared intention. We know that we come together with certain, maybe vague sense of purpose or value to being mindful or calming down for a week or something, you know, maybe it's much more precise that binds us. I don't want to make any assumptions. But we come together with the protection of that, and we come together with the protection of the space that's quiet, it's away from noisy things and so on. And we set aside our telephones and our internet, and we set aside even the talking outside of very specific insight dialogue practice. We have the support of a generous retreat manager. We have the support of a teacher. We're constructing something. And perhaps if we see each moment as a moment of meditation practice, a moment of calming down simply, good enough, then that benchmark of stillness, or perhaps of brightness of mind, mindfulness, perhaps that sense of being deeply, profoundly receptive to the world, including the world of other humans, the world of nature, the world of our own senses. There can be a level shift. And so the reference point of what's possible becomes a clearer and perhaps more refined guide or beacon for you, just like that little experience or whatever you've had. Some of you have had plenty of retreats, so you know what I'm talking about from those retreats. That experience of clarity that then says, oh, it's not a myth. This human potential is not a myth. It's genuine. And oh my God, even I, with all these, rattledness in the mind and all these crazy thoughts and all these screwed up personal history stuff, even I have touched it. Right? We can each know that. Because there's no one that knows your darkness better than you. So, figure, if it's possible for you, and you know what's not working in there, that's pretty good. So there's a reason, for being here together on retreat. Many reasons. But I'm trying to give it in this context of a path, of a life. It has a certain function. Retreat has a real function. Not just get away, like going to a spa, feel a little better, go home, get crazy. Maybe I can make a week next year, go home, get crazy. It's really, if we live diligently and intelligently, in light of this sense of a path, then retreat goes from a spa experience to a genuine shift. It's like a ratchet. And holds on the next place if it's nurtured and loved and cared for. There's this gradual clarifying of the heart. And sometimes, really substantial shift in understanding, in insight. By way of introducing this particular retreat and this particular set of practices that grows out of a relational understanding of the human experience, I'm going to hearken back to this shared intention. Now, some of you have experienced some insight dialogue many of you have not. So how can you say they're shared intention? Well, if we simply understand that rather than view human contact simply as an agitation or a distraction on the path of meditative practice and the inquiry into suffering and the end of suffering, if we simply open together to the possibility that interpersonal contact can actually not only be enfolded into fully meditative development, but could actually boost or amplify the meditative qualities of the mind, that together, might it be the case that there's a mutual reminding towards mindfulness? Sort of like, are you awake now? Mutually going back and forth as a sustaining quality of the practice. Might it be possible? Might it be possible that the investigation of the phenomenal experience of this moment can actually be impelled along through the energy and the intelligence and the experience of another, working together with oneself as one investigates this very moment, this mind? Might it be the case that energy in practice actually grows, that joy actually grows, and more challenging, can we envision a possibility that being with another can actually point each of us, both of us, collectively and individually, towards greater tranquility, to a down-regulation from the ragged and rapid qualities of this overwrought nervous system? Might it be possible that in the human acceptance, the presence of another that's just not wanting or needing, or pushing, that something in the heart lets go in a meaningful way? Might it be that concentration can actually become established quite deeply when it's resonating in this between with another? And perhaps most challenging, can we be with each other in a way that fosters rather than upsets equanimity? I think that that's the biggest challenge, equanimity. And yet, I've seen some amazing stuff. So, all of this, just being open to this possibility, could be our shared intention. Just a curiosity. Because it's very much everything I offer, as you'll see, is in the spirit of see for yourself. Ehi pasiko in Pali. See for yourself. Check everything out. Don't believe anything I say. Okay? So we have this community. This is our practice. May it serve.